The following is a production of the Media Ministry at New Salem Baptist Church in Soddy Daisy, Tennessee, featuring the teaching of Pastor Alan Rogers. If you're in the Chattanooga area, we invite you to be our guest at any of our weekly worship services, or visit us online at newsalembaptist.net. And now, here's Pastor Alan.
Why are you here? Now, I don't mean why are you sitting taking up room in a pew this morning, okay? I'm glad that you are. But when I say why are you here, what I mean is what is your purpose in life? What gets you up out of bed every morning? What is the thing that keeps you going? Recently, Lifeway Research published the results of a poll they had conducted among people who are religiously unaffiliated. In other words, these are people who have no religious preference, or they consider themselves agnostics, or they consider themselves atheists. And nearly 70% of the people in that poll agree with this statement. There are times I think there must be something more to this life than I have found so far. In other words, the majority of those who have no religious preference admit that they are wandering around, unable to find meaning or purpose in their lives. Now, if that's not the definition of lost, I don't know what is. Last week, we looked at a conversation that Jesus had with a woman that most of us would classify as lost. This was a woman who her life was full of shame, it was full of rejection, and full of poor moral choices that had come back to haunt her in a lot of ways. And in John chapter 4, verses 1 through 26, we see Jesus interact with this woman. We see her, in case you miss it, or just to remind you, we see Jesus go out of his way to seek out that woman while she was drawing water from a popular well in the region of Samaria. And we see Jesus actually cross social, ethnic, and religious boundaries to engage this woman. We see him share the hope of the gospel with her. We see him compassionately address the brokenness that her sin had wrought in her life. He doesn't judge her. He's not harsh with her. But he essentially asks her, hey, the way you've been living your life, how's that working for you? What if I could tell you about something better? When she tried to steer the conversation off on all kinds of tangents, he brought it right back to the central question, the real problem, which was her alienation from God. And as we closed out last week, we noticed that she gave evidence that her eyes had begun to be opened and she was ready to receive that gift of living water that Jesus was offering her. In other words, this lost woman found what she was looking for by choosing to put her trust, her faith in Jesus. Now, at that point, we need to ask, what comes next? We've seen what happens when somebody is lost. What Jesus offers them, what about those who've been found? How does that change the equation? Well, I mentioned last week that in the fourth chapter of John's gospel, we see Jesus engaged in these three interlocking conversations. These conversations overlap one another, but they share a common theme. The first conversation was the one between Jesus and this woman. But before that conversation reaches its conclusion, it gets interrupted because Jesus' disciples return from trying to rustle up some lunch in the nearby village. So while they're talking to Jesus, the woman runs back to the village to begin to tell all of her neighbors what's happened to her. And then Jesus engages his disciples in this conversation that has important implications for those of us who claim to be his followers today. And then that conversation, in turn, is itself interrupted when all these villagers come running out to meet this incredible man that had made such a difference in this woman's life. And so the villagers engage Jesus in a conversation, which shows us something about what the power of his presence can do to transform a community. So let's look at those two conversations this morning and see what they can teach us about how to find our purpose and our meaning in Jesus. Now, if that first conversation, the one we looked at last week, was all about Jesus guiding the lost to redemption, the second conversation is about Jesus guiding redeemed people to join God's mission. Look with me in John chapter 4, starting at verse 27. At this point, his disciples came, and they were amazed that he'd been speaking with a woman. Yet no one said, what do you seek, or why do you speak with her? Now, jump down to verse 31. Meanwhile, the disciples were urging him, saying, Rabbi, eat. But he said to them, I have food to eat that you do not know about. So the disciples were saying to one another, no one brought him anything to eat, did he? Jesus said to them, my food is to do the will of him who sent me and to accomplish his work. There is a special satisfaction that comes from being in sync with God's will. Jesus' disciples return from the village. They're surprised to find him talking with this woman. Jesus' conversation with this woman, as we mentioned last week, violated all kinds of social norms. And the disciples immediately had questions. Although apparently they knew better than to ask those questions out loud. Which brings about another question. How did John know what these disciples were thinking? Answer, because he was right there with them, thinking some of the same things. And so the first question they had was addressed to the woman. What do you seek? They assumed the woman's the one who initiated this conversation. She's pestering our boss. What's going on here? What are you trying to do here? They couldn't conceive of Jesus being the one to start the conversation. The second question was addressed to Jesus. Why did you speak with her? See, ancient Jewish rabbis followed their own very strict version of what we call today the Billy Graham rule. Billy Graham was famous for trying to never be alone with a female who was not part of his family. And a lot of pastors and some politicians and even some Christian CEOs try to follow a similar practice today. Ladies, were you to come see me in my office? You need to talk to me about something? Please don't be offended if I leave the door open or if I ask somebody else to join us, okay? Now, there's a lot of people, especially unbelievers, but even a few Christians in our world who ridicule this practice. They claim it's demeaning to women. What they fail to realize is that the rule is less about resisting temptation, although there is some of that, and I can tell you some stories about some people I know who have gotten themselves in trouble by not following that rule. It's less about resisting temptation as it is about eliminating gossip. So ladies, if I ask somebody else to join our conversation, it's nothing against you. It's actually a sign of respect. I want to make sure no tails are wagging later, okay? In fact, Graham reportedly instituted this rule after some newspapers printed some pretty salacious stories about him being spotted walking around town with some beautiful young woman who wasn't his wife. Turns out later it was one of his daughters. But how many people read down to find that out, right? Of course, our day is so upside down and crazy, I almost feel like I have to have a witness when I'm meeting with men. Because you know how people are these days. But in Jesus' day, they took this to a radical extreme. A lot of the rabbis, and they talk about this in the Talmud, they would avoid not just being seen with a woman, they wouldn't speak with a woman in public, much less private. They wouldn't even speak with their own wives and daughters out in public. And the justification that was often given was this was to prevent gossip and the accusation of adultery. Do you notice, though, that Jesus apparently was willing to risk the rumor mill in order to offer eternal life to this woman? That ought to say something to us. What surprised the disciples even more was that Jesus didn't appear very interested in the food they brought back. When they pressed him to eat, he said, I have food to eat that you don't know about. As people like us are prone to do, they were so focused on earthly material things, they missed what he was actually trying to say. What do you mean you're not hungry? Did one of you guys slip him a sandwich or something? Why is he not hungry? So Jesus then had to plainly explain to them that he took his highest satisfaction, not from a cheeseburger, but from doing God's will. For Jesus, fulfilling God's purpose was much more important than partaking of physical food. Accomplishing God's mission was Jesus' highest priority. How different from the excuses that we often give for never getting around to serving God. Well, I don't have time. I'm just so busy right now. You know, the kids got ball games and dance lessons and homework, and we'll get to it eventually. You know, I don't have the opportunity, or I don't have the money, I don't have the resources, I can't afford it. I'll get around to it someday. You notice how someday seldom seems to get here? We get so focused on what's right in front of us, on the urgent, that sometimes we lose sight of the important. If you want to experience a true sense of fulfillment, try aligning your priorities with God's purpose. What is that purpose, you say? Well, God's desire is to see spiritually dead people find spiritual life. Go back to verse 35. Do you not say there are yet 4 months and then comes the harvest? Behold, I say to you, lift up your eyes, look at the fields. They are white for harvest. Now, the area around the village of Sychar is known for agriculture. Most likely, Jesus could just point out and have his disciples look and see fields of wheat all around them. And in essence, what he says to his disciples is this: hey, you guys know how this works, right? You plant seed, and then you wait. And then you wait. And then you wait some more. You know, it takes time for the plants to grow and produce and get ripe. Eventually, months later, time comes to harvest. Well, guess what? When it comes to souls, the harvest is not in the future. It is right now. Jesus' words go right along with something that Matthew and Luke record him saying in a different context. The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. Jesus could see something that the disciples couldn't see at this point. He looks out, he sees these villagers coming out of Sychar heading his direction, and he knows why they're coming. They're the disciples, they're just people, you know, out for a stroll. But Jesus knows there's a huge spiritual opportunity that's headed their way if they're ready for it. These people were ready to hear about the living water that this woman claimed she had gotten from Jesus. And Jesus was encouraging his disciples to be ready to share that good news with them. What happens to the harvest when workers don't bring it in? You got an apple tree, you never pull the apples off of it. What's going to happen to those apples? They're going to rot. Eventually, they're going to fall off. They're not going to be any good. If the crop is ready, guess what? When's harvest time? Right now. So where is our harvest field? Hey, have you looked and seen what's happening all around us here in this community? Have you seen what's happening just across the four-way stop down here at Dallas Hollow? Have you seen what's getting ready to happen back here off Green Pond and Hickson Pike back behind us? And down Level Road? And wherever there's a piece of flat land, or not even not so flat land around us. Man, some of the places they're putting these houses, I'm like, how in the world? It'd have to be a mountain goat to get up there. People are moving to our community. According to census data, Tennessee's in the top 10, or was in the top 10 fastest growing states for 2024 and 2025. It slowed down a little bit this year, but there's still a lot of people headed this way. Tennessee's population is expected to grow by at least 8% over the next 10 years, or a little under 1% a year. And a significant number of those people who are coming to Tennessee are coming not just to Nashville, not just to Memphis, not just to Knoxville. They are coming here. Thank you, EPB Gig. And all the natural beauty we have and all the resources we have. People want to move here and they want to work here. And they're coming from all over. And here's the thing that may not have dawned on you yet. A lot of those people who are moving into our community, they are unchurched and they are lost. Dr. Scott Harris is our new director of missions for the Hamilton County Baptist Association. I'm looking forward to a time when I can have him come on a Sunday morning and meet most of you. He popped in on one of our Wednesday night studies a while back. So some of you have had the chance to meet him. Scott previously was the director of evangelism for the Illinois Baptist State Association. In other words, he was in charge of coordinating evangelism for the entire state of Illinois among Southern Baptists up there. And he has moved down here. And somebody said, why did you go from covering a whole state to just covering a county? He said, because I was having to cover a whole state. And now I want to get to know people. So he came here to Hamilton County to follow Dr. Culbreth. And I was having a lunch with him a while back, and Dr. Harris said that the majority of people moving to Hamilton County are coming from three places primarily. They're coming from California, they're coming from New York State, and they're coming from Illinois. Those are people he knows something about. By and large, that means a lot of these new people who are moving into our area are coming from communities where the church is no longer a significant part of their culture. I've had people who've moved here from other places remark to me more than once. They kind of joke about the three questions that locals ask them when they first move in. The first one is, where are you coming from? The second one is, which college football team do you pull for? The third one is, where do you go to church? And you might as well be speaking a foreign language. Because for a lot of these people, that's just not part of their experience. I know it's hard for us to understand, right? You can't throw a rock in this community without hitting a Baptist or Methodist church, right? But for them, I mean, they see these buildings, but they don't see a lot of people in them. And, you know, they don't have much interaction with people who are really serious about Jesus. And so it's a foreign concept. They're a lot like this woman at the well in Sychar. They're spiritually lost, but they may not even realize it. They may not have the vocabulary to understand it. They're so focused on the things of this world. They know there's something missing, like those people in that survey, but they have no idea what it is or where to find it. God is sending the mission field right here in our backyard. Now, we can gripe about the traffic. We can gripe about the stress on services, all that stuff. That's not going to change anything. They're still coming. And God has put us strategically right here on this corner for a reason. What are we going to do about it? There's an incredible opportunity for spiritual harvest coming for those who are prepared for it. And God invites us to join Him in this redemptive mission. Picking back up at verse 36. Already he who reaps is receiving wages and is gathering fruit for life eternal, so that he who sows and he who reaps may rejoice together. For in this case the saying is true, one sows, another reaps. I sent you to reap that for which you've not labored. Others have labored, and you've entered into their labor. So according to Luke chapter 19, verse 10, Jesus described his purpose in life as this: the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. Jesus' mission statement in a nutshell. But here's the thing. Those of us who've come to know Jesus, who've discovered that fountain of living water that he offers, he invites us to join in that redemptive mission with him. In John chapter 4, Jesus told the disciples that those who recognize that the harvest is ripe and they join him in gathering in the fruit are going to receive the reward not only in this life, but in the life to come. And Jesus stressed again, the harvest time is now. He alluded to a prophecy there in Amos chapter 9, verse 13, when he talks about he who sows and he who reaps may rejoice together. That is an allusion to the prophet Amos from the Old Testament, that his followers, having grown up in synagogue, would have realized, they would have captured that. What Amos says in chapter 9, verse 13 is this: the days are coming, declares the Lord, when the reaper will be overtaken by the plowman and the planter by the one who is treading grapes. New wine will drip from the mountains and flow from the hills. In other words, Amos was looking ahead to a time when the harvest would be so abundant that those who were planting were getting overcome by those who were reaping. You couldn't plant fast enough before it was ready to be harvested. And if you want to be part of fulfilling a prophecy, this is a great place to start, okay? To jump in on this one. Because when God starts moving, the time to harvest is now. And if the harvest is ready now, church, what are we doing to be ready to do our part? Do we recognize our role in helping bring in that harvest? Now, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. All these people that are moving in here from other places, they're not going to just look and say, huh, that's a nice building there across from the elementary school. Why don't we go drop in and see what's happening there Sunday morning? Most of them, we're not even going to be on their radar screen. You know what we're going to have to do? And we already try to do this, but we're going to have to really be conscious about this. We need to get out there. That's why we do things like the thing we do for the on the first day of school when we're out here greeting all the kids when they come to be dropped off. That's why we go set up a booth at Allen's Fall Festival. That's why we look for opportunities to get out of this building and get out into the community where people can see us, where people can see us loving on this community and serving this community to see who we really are. Otherwise, they're going to drive back and forth across this building and they're going, I wonder what happens in there. You know, unless God's Spirit is really drawing them, but we're going to have to get out there and meet them where they're at as we invite them to come in where we're at. Are we ready to reach these new people who are moving into our community? Because I tell you, if we're not, God's going to find somebody who is. Are we ready and willing to do whatever is necessary to be prepared for this new harvest season? Are we healthy as a church, healthy spiritually? Healthy emotionally, because people don't like hanging out places where there's lots of drama. And that's hard in a church. I told you before, in church, you got a lot of people, broken people coming in, being packed in close proximity. And when broken people get in close proximity, there's a lot of risk of rough edges rubbing up against each other, right? So we have to work extra hard at making sure we're smoothing out those rough edges and getting as emotionally healthy as we can. Do away with the drama. Practice forgiveness. Learn to let stuff just roll over. Don't be looking out for ourselves, but making Jesus the focus of everything we do. It's not about me. It's not about you. Somebody asked me today, how you doing today, Pastor? Better than I deserve. Let me tell you that. We don't have any room for any prima donnas around here, okay? The spotlight needs to be on Jesus. We need to be working to make sure we are healthy institutionally. Are we prepared? And folks, I'm going to be honest with you. Since the pandemic, we're still kind of limping along in some areas. We've come a long way, but we've got to do some work we've got to do to get ready institutionally to make sure that we got our ducks in a row so that if people start coming in here, we've got a process to get them plugged in to start training them as disciples and to start deploying them and their gifts back into the ministry. There's some things we need to do to get ready for that. What's the process? When somebody walks through those doors, what do we do next? We need to think through that. We need to make sure we're funneling people into Sunday school groups so they can meet other people and get plugged in and grow and be fed as disciples and trained to walk. And let me tell you, the people I see right now in our church that are really growing, guess where they are? Sunday mornings at 9:30 most weeks. They're in a small group. And they're helping each other. And they're building those relationships. And they're growing in their faith. And they're being encouraged by one another. Are we preparing ourselves to welcome people from all walks of life? As we say in our vision statement, a place where people from all walks of life can worship God passionately. Part of what that means is it's not just a place where, you know, we kind of are informal and we let people kind of follow the Spirit's lead, okay? Part of that means, are we making sure that we are accessible to people that aren't just like us? Look around for a moment. Let me tell you something. We are perfectly equipped to reach the people that are here right now. But is everybody moving in just like you and me? No. Now, I'm not saying we need to turn this thing upside down and become somebody we're not and put on a show and just focus everything on getting a big crowd in here. That's not what I'm saying. Okay, we need to be true to who we are. But we also need to be conscious of how we talk among ourselves and what it's like for somebody to walk in these doors for the first time. Because we can get so comfortable talking among ourselves that we forget there may be people in our midst who have no clue what we're talking about. When we say, hey, we're going to have big fellowship in the UB. What's a UB? For those of you who don't know, it stands for Unity Building. That's the big white building back up here on the hill. Those of us who've been around a while, you know, we get tired of saying that. It's a mouthful, so we just say UB. Hey, meet in the UB. Well, if you're here for the first time, you may not know where that is. And that's a simple example. Where are the restrooms located? I don't know how many times I've stood in that lobby and when we've had a big event here and had a lot of guests in and had people walk right past the restroom sign and come to me and say, hey, where's the restroom? It's little things like that that we make sure we're helping people be comfortable and plugged in. It's thinking through those things. There's a reason that we have all the guests parking right out here in the front. Okay? That's strategic. So we have guest parking right out front where people can say, hey, okay, there's a place for me to park when I get here. When you get out of your car, one of those guest parking spaces, and you look up, you see two things. One, you see a sign that says, welcome to New Salem. And the other thing is you see the front door. So we want people to come in that way and come, and we've usually got somebody here at the desk. We've got people at the door to meet them, and we've got somebody at the desk who's there to help if they need help finding out where they're supposed to go. Because if you, I mentioned Dr. Harris came on a Wednesday night. It's a little different on Wednesdays. We don't have quite as many people floating around. So we have signage up, but we don't have a lot of people pointing directions. But he came on a Wednesday night, and he couldn't find where our group was meeting. And he walked by the classroom looking for the group. And thankfully, a couple of our safety guys saw him. I joke with him all the time. I said, yeah, he teases me about the fact he didn't know where to go when he got here. And I said, yeah, but our safety guys knew you were here. They had their eye on you. But when somebody first comes in, how do they know where to go? We need to think through things like that. We need to be ready. Not only do we need to get out of this building and get into the community and show people that we love Jesus and we love them, but we also need to make sure that when they do come here, we make it as easy as possible for them to figure out where they need to be and what's going on. Because they don't know. Jesus also informed his disciples that they were part of a much bigger harvest effort, and there was room for many workers to play a part. He tells them here, in this case, one sows, another reaps. I sent you to reap for what you've not labored. In fact, they were getting ready to witness a harvest that came from a seed someone else had planted right in front of their eyes. And this brings us to the third conversation, where we see Jesus guiding broken communities to experience spiritual transformation. Jump back up to verse 28. We skipped that originally, but let's see what's happened here. After the disciples show up and the woman leaves, we see verse 28, the woman left her water pot and went into the city. Now, think about that. She came out to get water with her water pot. She was in such a hurry to get back and tell her neighbors what had happened. She left the water pot sitting right there. That tells us two things. First of all, she was feeling some urgency that she needed to get back to town and tell everybody what had happened in her life. The second thing, it tells us she was planning to come back to get her water pot. So she goes to the city and she says to the men, now remember, why did she come out at noon to the well? Because she was so ashamed of the mess in her life that she didn't want to be around any of her neighbors, right? She was trying to avoid any scenes. But now she goes right back to the village and says to the men, come see a man who told me all the things I have done. This is not the Christ, is he? And the way that's phrased in the Greek suggests that she's expecting them to come to the conclusion that yes, it is. They went out of the city and were coming to him. So based on what they saw in her, they said, we got to check this out. So they leave town and they're heading to the well to meet Jesus. And then jump down to verse 39. From that city, many of the Samaritans believed in him because of the word of the woman who testified. He told me all the things that I've done. So when the Samaritans came to Jesus, they were asking him to stay with them, and he stayed there 2 days. Many more believed because of his word. And they were saying to the woman, it's no longer because of what you said that we believe, for we have heard for ourselves and know that this one is indeed the Savior of the world. So what's going on here? Well, first, this woman's neighbors hear her testimony. In this case, the harvest came about as a result of seed, not sown by Jesus' disciples, but by this recently converted woman. Remember, where had Jesus' disciples just been? They had been in the village. How many people did they bring back out with them? Zero. Because they were so focused on picking up the Whataburger. You know, they were focused on getting lunch. They weren't focused on winning souls. So they go in, they do their business, they come back out. Yeah, here's a newly converted woman. She doesn't even know what she doesn't know yet. But she is so excited because of what Jesus has done in her life. She makes a beeline back to the place she's trying her best to avoid. And she goes to tell a village full of spiritually thirsty people how they can have that thirst quenched just like she had. And that's one of the things that we learn. People who research this is that, you know, for one thing, new churches tend to grow the fastest. That's because the people that are coming to Jesus in that new church are the most excited. The longer you walk with Jesus, the harder it is to think about lost people in your life, right? Because you're used to hanging out with a bunch of saved people, a bunch of found people. But somebody who has just found the Lord, they are so excited. They're telling everybody. You find a new restaurant that you really like, what do? You go tell everybody about it, don't you? She is fed something here that is much more satisfying than a gourmet meal. Her whole life has been changed, and she goes back to tell her neighbors about it. And how does she tell them about Jesus? She simply told her story. And I told you this before. You know, you don't have to have a PhD in theology to be a witness. You don't have to know some kind of canned presentation. Now, those can be helpful. They got their place. But this woman simply went and shared her story. What's your story? What was your life like before you came to Jesus? How did you meet Jesus? And how has your life been different since? If you can answer those three questions, you can share the gospel with anybody. And guess what? Nobody can argue with it because it's your story. Okay? Just tell your story. When's the last time you shared your story of coming to know Jesus with somebody else? So she tells her story, and then they want to investigate Jesus for themselves. These people were so intrigued by the change in this woman's life, they sought out Jesus for themselves. They came, and what did they do? They spent time with Jesus. And as a result, they came to believe in Jesus too. When's the last time you invited someone to come spend time with Jesus? To come to church? Hey, if you get tongue-tied trying to share the gospel, at least just invite them to church, okay? We'll help you explain the gospel to them, okay? They're probably going to hear the gospel if they come on any given Sunday, all right? And we're trying to come up with some tools. We got a few that are already available to help you invite people to church. Now, if you go out in the lobby today, let me tell you about some things you're going to find out. We're going to have a special station set up, hopefully by next Sunday, as we get ready for this big, busy outreach season we got coming up. But on the table on this side of the lobby, okay, you're going to find three things. One, you're going to find a little blue card. And we only have a few of these right now, but we got more coming. They were supposed to be delivered this weekend, but apparently UPS didn't like the fact we weren't here. So we'll get these by next Sunday. And it's got everything you need. It says you're invited. We've used these before. It's got all the information they need to come on a Sunday or a Wednesday. And you can hand these out to people. You carry some around with you. I know somebody that when they go out to eat, if you're going to do this, you better leave a good tip, okay? But when they sign the ticket for their meal, they slip one of these in the book along with the ticket, okay? But don't do that if you're not going to leave a good tip, because we don't want to get that kind of reputation. But if you're going to be generous, you can leave one of these as an invitation to your server. But you can hand these out anywhere, all right? So you're going to find some of these out there, and we will have more by next Sunday. Something else, those of you who got new people moving in your neighborhood, we have a special postcard just for them. It says, New Day, New Start at New Salem Baptist Church. And on the back says, Welcome to the neighborhood. Has everything they need to know to come to a Sunday morning service. And you can hand these out to people in your neighborhood that are new. Or if you got somebody at your job who's new, you can say, hey, I want to invite you to church. Just hand them one of these. It's so big, they're not going to lose it. So, and then there's a third thing out there. We've got something called the Three Circles Life Conversation Guide. Some of y'all have seen me do the Three Circles presentation. It's an easy way to share the gospel. This walks you through it. You don't have to have this to do it. You can do it. Once you learn a presentation, you can do it on the back of a napkin. There's also an app you can put on your phone that walks you through this. It's the same thing as this book. But we've got a bunch of these books out there, and they have our contact info on the back of them. You can hand these out to people. You can walk with them through it on your own and just read the book to them. Or you can hand it to somebody and say, hey, I think this has changed my life. I think maybe you need to check this out. And we got a bunch of these, and we can get more of those too. Hopefully by next Sunday, we're also going to have some postcards you can use to invite people to our Good Friday and Easter services. Those are on the way. They're in production right now. But we're going to have those set up where you can take those. Hey, listen, if we're going to go to the trouble of having these things printed up, don't just let them sit out there and collect dust. That's a waste of money. Give them out. I want all this stuff to be gone, us having to reorder soon. Because trust me, there's enough people moving into this community, we could get rid of this stuff in a hurry if we worked at it. Why don't we do that? And you know what? Not everybody's going to come, but somebody might. You never know. Maybe you're going to hit one of those people that's asking that question. Hey, I know there's meaning out there, but I don't know where to find it. And maybe you're breaking the ice and taking the initiative will encourage them to come and hear about Jesus. And what happened in this community when they came and spent time with Jesus? Their community was transformed by their experience with Jesus. It started with one woman who was too ashamed to be around anybody. She snuck out to the local well when nobody was there. But because of the difference in her life and the testimony she shared, an entire community was impacted. Do you want to see our community and our nation transformed? Everywhere I go, people are griping about this and griping about that and what shape our country's in. Do you really want to know how to see this community transformed? Let me give you a little hint. It's not going to come by electing the right people, although that helps. It's not going to come by passing the right laws, although that's got its place too. And don't hear me saying, you know, we don't need to vote. We absolutely need to vote as believers. But if you really want to see this community transformed, you go start introducing people to Jesus and training them to be his disciples. And when you get enough people who are in love with Jesus and following him, you're not going to have to worry about what laws you pass or what politicians you elect, because they're going to elect the right people naturally, because they're looking to make the community a better place to live. And they're looking to God's leadership to show them what that looks like. If we want to see our community transform, we need to open our eyes. We need to stretch out our hands to the harvest. And we need to testify about Jesus to our neighbors. Whenever we see events like we've seen this weekend, a lot of people automatically turn to biblical prophecy. You know, we've spent a lot of energy trying to figure out what does this event mean? Or how does that fit into the grand scheme? And what's the timeline? Hey, times like this should remind us that time is short and Jesus can return at any moment, okay? But put away your charts, because God didn't enlist you to be on the planning committee. I know that may upset some of you, because I know you really get into this stuff. But He didn't invite you to be part of the planning committee. He has that well in hand, okay? God invites you to be part of the welcoming committee. Our job is to make sure that when Jesus does come, there are a whole bunch of people who are there to greet Him and looking forward to it. And how do we do that? We introduce people to Jesus as Savior, and we train them how to follow Him as Lord. Josh McDowell, I actually heard Josh share this story about a man he knew who was a corporate headhunter. This had a profound effect on me when I heard this story. This man he knew, his job, he would get hired by companies to go out and help them find people to fill their high-level positions. And he had a particular interview technique that he liked to use. He would bring a candidate in to the office in a kind of a casual setting, and they would sit on the couches, talk to each other, and tell jokes, and he would offer refreshments, and they just get kind of loosened up and relaxed. And they're joking and going along, so things are going well here. And all of a sudden, he would sit upright, look them in the eye, and say, "What's your purpose in life?" And most people would be so startled. Start like, blah, 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 blah. You know, you really find out what people were made of, okay? Except for this one guy. And it started out normal enough. You know, they sit down on the couches. They're talking. They're having some coffee and, you know, talking about kids and sports and stuff like that. And kind of getting loosened up and comfortable and telling some jokes and stuff. And all of a sudden, he jumps up in the guy's face and says, "What's your purpose in life?" And the guy didn't miss a beat. He says, "To go to heaven, take as many people with me as I can." Folks, that's it. That is it. That's our purpose. That's why God put this church right here. If we don't do anything else, that's why God has put us here. And let's be alert and aware and seeking those opportunities to tell people how they can be ready when Jesus comes back.
If you enjoyed this program, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach us at info@newsalembaptist.net. Thanks for listening.